Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
And we've set out to review the UK's most popular cookbooks. Those that you probably have at home and haven't opened in a while. We take one cookbook each episode to cook from and to stress test, digging out their best recipes, bringing them to life again, and hopefully inspiring you to do so too. Hello, Victoria.
Hi, Hannah.
How are you doing?
I am good. It's summer, apparently. We're talking about the weather again. But this is what we do.
It's all we have.
A very, very grey morning in London this morning, and it is July. So that's good.
Very depressing. What have you been looking at, loving, coveting?
So my, hot thing that I want to talk about this week, my hot thing.
Ooh, your catchphrase.
This is the hot thing segment. it's a book that I have thought about for a while, but we've not talked about it on the pod before. But it's Claire Saffitt's Off Bon Appetit fame's Dessert Person book. And it's been kind of following me around the internet, which it probably has for most people since it came out. And if it came out this year or last year, I have a feeling that maybe it came out for Christmas.
Okay, yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, you definitely have seen it. It's got that beautiful citrus cake on the front with oranges, or I don't know if it's grapefruits.
All the same.
On the front, and it's like Dessert Person, and it's like just good. And I've been thinking about it. I haven't bought it yet, but it's a little bit of an expensive book because it's like an American import, as they all are. Yeah. Quite expensive. But this week I saw on Instagram Felicity Spector had cooked the honey tahini challah bread.
Oh my god.
From the book. And I was like, I need that in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks so good. And I had a little look at the list of recipes in it, and like, just, you know, to think like, do I want this book really?
Yeah.
Because as we know, I'm not a huge baker.
No.
Like,
you're just a normal size baker.
I am. I'm not even a tiny baker. I'm just a hold me close now, tiny baker.
Yes.
But there's some really good, there's some really amazing sounding recipes in this book.
Sorry.
That's my audition for X Factor this year, including kombucha turmeric tea cake.
Wow. How trendy, getting all those like buzz ingredients in there.
I love a kombucha, can I just say. Did you know I lived in Japan? And they eat that a lot there. And I was like, I'm very keen for it. So creamy. Such a creamy pumpkin, which is her band name for the week. Yeah. Peach Melba tart.
Lovely.
Peanut butter and Concord grape sandwich cookies. I'd probably die for those.
Yes. They sound amazing.
What is a Concord grape? I guess we'll never know. That's such an American thing.
It flies really fast across the Atlantic.
Got you. Well, clearly not fast enough, because I've never seen Concord grapes in the shop here.
I feel like the Americans specify fruits a lot more than we do. You know what I mean? A Concord grape, key limes.
Yeah.
Shit like that. They're the only examples I have. I'm sorry.
Well, some of the books we've done before, you know, oh, you need a Japanese aubergine or something. I guess it's just because they have, you know.
Choice.
Yeah. They have different climates so they can grow things. Whereas we're like, you just take the lime that you get in Tesco, mate.
Literally.
Yeah. It also has a whole breads and savory baking section. We love that.
Yeah.
I was mostly interested in the all allium deep dish quiche. Don't love a quiche, but all allium sounds great.
Yeah.
And the pull apart sour cream and chive rolls. So yes. I'm putting it on my birthday list.
Okay, noted.
Thanks, guys. So that's the
that sounds great.
That's the book that we are not talking about this week.
We are not talking about that book this week.
But we're staying in America.
We are.
Are we? I don't know. You know the deets.
I do know the deets. I will share the deets. First, I will remind you what we do here in case this is your first time joining us and you're a crazy person. Vic and I put together all the lists that we could find online of the best cookbooks ever. We put them into one big old master list, and then we've taken the most mentioned books from that big master list. We take one each episode. We leaf through it. I won't say we read it. We browse. We cook from it, we talk about it, and then we rate it. And this episode's book is Joy of Cooking. You know, they dropped the.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, it used to be The Joy of Cooking, but they got rid of that. It was holding them back, I guess.
I would like to suggest that to Stephanie Alexander's team as well.
You just want it to be Cook's Companion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the always throws me.
You need an article, though. You need... I'm a grammar Nazi.
I know. I just rolled my eyes at Hannah when she said that. And I was like, yeah, but is it easier for me to write and say if it's just Cook's Companion and it's a nice, it's alliterative, you know.
Okay.
I'm about the vibes and you're about the grammar. I think Cook's Companion has better vibes. Anyway, we're not talking about that book this week.
Right, let me tell you about Joy of Cooking.
Please.
So this was written by Irma Rombauer.
Great name, can I just say.
It is a great name. And her daughter, Marion Rombauer-Becker, is credited as well. I'll get to that in a bit. Like I said in the last episode, I think this is definitely the oldest book that we've done, right? So Irma was born in 1877.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, died in 1962. Fun fact about Irma, she was born in St. Louis in Missouri.
Oh.
This fun kind of timely fact. Her half-brother was Max C. Starkloff, who introduced social distancing during the 1918 flu pandemic.
Hey!
He's the original, the bro. He helped us out in COVID.
Wow, this is a very successful family.
I know, they are quite successful. So the kind of foundation of the book is quite sad in that Irma Rambauer's husband committed suicide. And it was the Great Depression and she had no money and she was really worried she didn't have a career. And obviously to make a living, but also to help her through her grief, she decided to make this cookbook. But she wasn't known as a great cook. She, in her biography by Anne Mendelssohn, they say that her family were like, this is the worst idea. She's a terrible cook.
It's a nice thing to say to your grieving mother, isn't it?
I know, it's pretty cool. She saw an opportunity to create something practical and instructive and that had like good food for all budgets, all skill levels, kind of like, you know, our vibe. She wants things to be accessible, like easy to do, not crazy expensive. And another person from St. Louis had published a cookbook in 1929 featuring crazy expensive ingredients and decadent dishes. And I think that kind of pissed her off, basically. And she was like, this isn't the time. We need to be making accessible recipes. So
she's our girl.
I love Irma, basically, is what I've concluded here. So while she didn't know how to cook, she was apparently a great host, and her biographer wrote this about her, which I think is really nice. No one could be long in her diminutive presence without sensing an air of concentrated intelligence, strength, self-possession, charm, and dignity that seemed to sweep all before it, except that she knew how to soften it with disarming feminine self-deprecation and sheer fun.
Oh, she's us.
It's like looking in a mirror, basically.
Yeah, we love self-deprecation and sheer fun.
And I don't know if you saw, there's so much of her character throughout this book as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw on the peanut butter and bacon sandwich. In the little intro, she writes, virtue, however admirable, is frequently dull. And I'm like,
yes,
Irma, love you. So basically, the way that she went about making this book was she was really well connected. She had loads of friends. So she started collecting loads of recipes from her friends and their families. And these were kind of hand-me-downs or really tried and tested recipes. Once she collected all of them, she went home and she tested them and she tweaked them to her liking. And then when she was happy with the bunch that she had, she organized it into the book form. She called it The Joy of Cooking, a compilation of reliable recipes with a casual culinary chat.
Oh.
And she self-published. She had 3,000 copies printed up by a local print shop. And it was 395 pages back then. And it's obviously, grown quite a lot since then. So then she just did everything herself. She mailed out copies of the cookbook from her house. She did all the publicity and the sales campaigns. And she was like a great advocate of her own book by the sounds of it. And because she sounds like she had this great personality, right? So it was kind of infectious.
Yeah.
And then the publisher, Bobs Merrill, picked up the professional publishing of the book in 1936 and with the debut of the second edition. And then since then, it's just become this massive book. And when you look online, it's just just, I think it's very similar to maybe like Cook's Companion in Australia, in that this is a Bible that people hand down to their families. And
it feels like that for sure.
Yeah. So there's been a new edition basically every decade. So, and it keeps changing. It's like a living, breathing thing. So they keep adding or taking away different things. So in the 1936 edition, that's the only one that has a chapter to soufflés. And then the 1943 edition had like a wartime rationing section.
Oh, cool.
But the sixth edition in 1975 is considered by many to be the best or the truest to the book's vision. And that was the last one to be edited by Marion Rombauer Becker, who was Irma's daughter. Mm. She had lots of help from her husband and her son, Ethan. Yeah, it's just one of the best loved ones. I read this interesting piece on Bon Appetit that was called The Obsessive Sport of Shopping for a Vintage Joy of Cooking. And a lot of people look for this squirrel illustration, which I don't know if you have it in yours, but I have it in mine on page 515.
Oh,
and it's
it's How to Skin a Squirrel.
How to skin a squirrel.
I did see that. Yes.
It's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, I do have it. There's a boot involved.
It's a boot. Yeah, they just cut the squirrel's skin. And then there's like a picture of a little drawing of a boot standing on the squirrel tail and like a hand just pulling up the skin.
Yeah, like taking a jumper off a child, but like upside down and with a boot. That's not how I take jumpers off children.
Okay, you're never babysitting for me. But just in terms of other different editions, there was a 1997 edition that had loads of starry chefs and celebrity food writers, and people did not like this at all. They said it was heresy. And then in 2006, it kind of returned to its classic joy edition. And then, yeah, it's just been passed down the family. So John Becker, who is Irma's great grandson, and his wife, they're now the fourth generation in charge of the franchise. And they just released a new edition in 2019 that had loads of new shit in there, like ramen, Anzac biscuits, Eton mess, ingredients that had come about like umeboshi and stuff like that. So they're always kind of updating and trying to keep it relevant and timely, which is quite cool. Yeah. Like, I don't think you could say that from many cookbooks. It's just like bash it out, one edition, whereas this just keeps evolving.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's just really widely loved. There's very little criticism of this book. The New Yorker said that the only negative about it, or that people have to say about it, is that it's more of a general reference volume rather than like a recipe go-to. But they defend that and say that there's loads of recipe books out there. So, you know, it's almost a compliment to say that this is like the reference book. And yeah, I don't know if you noticed in the book, but there's loads of recipes that have the word cocaine at the end of them.
Yeah, I did notice that. And I was very confused.
I was very confused. I thought it was a technique or a way of cooking something, and then Googled it, and it's actually in the foreword as well.
Oops, but we got caught out there then. For now. Sorry, Irma.
We just jumped straight in there.
In our defense, it's massive. It's 900 pages long.
I think every book has been massive now. So yeah. Just take it for granted that it's a massive book if we're talking about it. But the cocaine thing is, because there are so many recipes in this, and people tend to say to Marion or to whoever in the family, what are your favorite recipes? Their way of kind of denoting their favorite recipes was to put the word cocaine at the end of each of their favorite recipes, which is weird but cute. I mean, they could have just put like a little tick or something. Yeah. But I like it. It's cool.
Yeah, it's interesting because like there is in the front of the book, there's like a key, right? That's got these different symbols that they use. There's like an arrow and a little icicle for frozen foods and a blender and stuff. So they could have put it in there, right? Like they should have said, if it's something cocaine, then it's one of our faves, or it's a family fave or whatever. It's a special one. But, you know, they keep you guessing. They make you read, which is, you know, good for the kids.
But yeah, I mean, there's so much to say, and there's tons of stuff online. There's like biographies about Irma. I probably haven't even done it justice, but it's just an incredible piece of work.
What a great story. Yeah, I love it too. I feel like I love it. I love her even more now.
I know, I love it. Yeah, what were your first impressions of the book?
So yeah, like I said, it's big, it's massive, but that's par for the course these days with our pod books. But it felt quite intimidating, I guess, when it arrived. There's some like sketches, as you mentioned, the squirrel in here. There's no pictures. It's all black and white, and it's very densely packed. Like if I go to any given page, there's at least four maybe five recipes on it. Like, it's not like your standard cookbook, it's like one per page. So I was a bit worried about where to start. But yeah, what I did love is, so at the beginning, there's like a menu section, which I loved. And I initially wanted to cook a whole menu. So there's breakfast and brunch menus, and then there's luncheon menus. The luncheon goes on for ages. It goes to the fish, meat, eggs, dinner for family and friends, and then like fancy dinners. And there's even like wedding menu suggestion. And I think that is a good place to start, because it shows you what she thinks or what they think goes together.
Yeah.
That was helpful in getting to understand the kind of book that it is. I mean, some of it's pretty like, really? Gross. But I have the 1975 version. So we're still with like, there's an aspic section.
Apples stuffed with sauerkraut was one that I was like, what?
Yeah. There's a lot of like interesting things that you maybe in the more modern editions there aren't, which would be a shame actually.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know what timbale was.
I know.
And there's a whole section on in the egg section of timbales. I Googled it and it's like a little, like you cook it in a ring.
Yeah.
And like layer it.
Kind of a custard thing.
Yeah,
you make like not a sweet custard, like a savory custard, right?
And yeah, then I think so.
Add different things like veggies or meat or whatever.
There's a definite theme of like rings. This was obviously a time of everyone's got these like cooking rings. Then you put in like a lot of the rices you put in a ring. And
yeah,
it's I love that. I was also very surprised and delighted at how many like international recipes are in here.
I know.
There's loads of kind of German sounding recipes. There's Japanese recipes. I saw a Burmese recipe, like for its time.
Amazing.
It's incredible. There's pictures even of like chopsticks and how to eat the, you know, things from different cultures. And I was like, that is so great.
Absolutely. There's loads of Irma was doing it before, it was cool, but the loads of sourdough stuff as well. There's like the sourdough chocolate cake. I thought that was really ahead of its time. It's really impressive.
Yeah, so I think once you got into it, and like you said, it does feel very Cook's Companion for an American audience, because there's very American things in here.
Yeah,
like the baking section, the breads and the cookies, and the Christmas section. Not, there's not Christmas section, but there's various Christmas bits in here, and it's all feels very American, which I love. You don't get that very often.
No, totally. Did you see the cheese carrots?
No, that sounds disgusting.
You grate some yellow cheese. You moisten with cream or salad dressing, and you shape them into small carrots and place a sprig of parsley on the end so it looks like a little carrot.
What a surprise for someone.
There were so many of those recipes. There was the turtle soup as well.
Yes, which I was like, oh, that's a euphemism for something. But no. It's real turtles.
Yeah, or terrapin if you're feeling it.
But you can just buy a can of that. One of the recipes I saw was like, oh, just a can of turtle soup. I was like, oh, the Campbells make that?
Gross. Do you see as well in the drinks section that she suggests, as a non-alcoholic drink, you just serve some chicken broth over ice.
Oh, no.
Broth on the rocks, she calls it. Yeah, she thinks it makes a nice little tipple.
I mean, you know, she's head of the bone broth lads, the keto bone broth lads, who think it's going to revitalize your innards.
Totally.
Ice, though. You'd get like a scum of like fat.
Sorry. Not the word scum, no.
Sorry, lads. Yeah, and she does do have a good overview of ways to cook things. Like, so if there's ever like a donut, for example, or like a croquette, as she always says at the beginning of the recipe, go and read about deep frying foods. And there's a few paragraphs about how to deep fry foods effectively. Yeah. There's no expectation of skill. It's all there up for learning.
Yeah, she assumes nothing, which is quite nice. So, which is, I guess, that's what she was trying to do, right? She was trying to help the sisters out struggling with the Great Depression.
I didn't think anything was too difficult. I didn't see a recipe apart from maybe the skinning a squirrel, which felt like, oh, this is a project or something that would take me a long time, or that it does definitely feels like it's all like kind of weeknight, good for the whole family.
Yeah. Did you see the high altitude section as well?
Mm.
She has like a section on high altitude cakes for baking at like 5,000 feet, which... it's just mental. I never even thought about how altitude would affect
baking
on a plane.
Beaks on a plane. God damn it.
Bakes on a plane. I guess she's just thinking about those people that live in like Denver and the Rockies and a lot of and I think this is probably, it was very like 60s, 70s thing, right? Yeah. A lot of like meat and sweet. A lot of pineapple happening with ham, which is obviously that's a thing still.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like pineapple French toast where you put like egg and pineapple juice in the eggy bread mixture and then you serve it as a sandwich with ham. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. Love that there's a whole sandwich section though. I've got, I can't respect that anymore. Like, not enough sandwich sections in recipe books, in my opinion.
I completely agree. But yeah, there are some weird combinations. When I first opened it, I was just laughing because all I could see were these mental recipes. Like, yeah, there's like a mock mayonnaise made with evaporated milk and stuff like that. And I was just like, what are we doing here? And all the vegetable recipes that I looked at seemed to be deep fried. Here's how you make your veg. Stick it in a load of oil. But then when you get into it, there's good stuff in there.
There's also a whole chapter on how to use canned soups to make other things, which is the most American thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You've got a can of mushroom soup and you make it into like a noodle casserole or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a spaghetti bake. Oh, yeah. There's all of that is in here, which I think is fascinating. But I guess that was it. Like tins of soup are cheap still. And that's an easy way to, you know, cook.
Yeah, she has like a quick tomato sauce, I think, which is like, use soup.
Thomas Keller is fucking fuming, chomping at the bit at this recipe.
This is the anti-Thomas Keller, this book. It's everything different from the French Laundry.
I love it. What a joy.
I got my book secondhand, as we often do, and mine has a little inscription, which I don't know if it's really sweet or really sad, to Magdalene, wishing you the many joys of marriage. And she's capitalized joys. See what she did there? Joy of cooking, joys of marriage.
I see what she did there.
Love, Dolores.
Oh.
It makes me wonder what happened to Magdalene's marriage. Is it over now?
My hope is that Madeline just got so rich she didn't have to cook for herself and didn't need this book anymore.
Yeah, let's go with that one.
Of her own money, not her husband's money.
Of course.
I also got, I don't have an inscription, but I got a Ex Libris little slip in mine from Henrietta Wadsworth. It's very beautiful. I'll put a picture of it up. So thank you to those people for, you know, passing it on, getting it done.
So, Victoria, what did you make?
What did I cook? Well, I made three things.
Good.
A
plus.
Thank you. That's it. End of episode. I didn't feel stressed or worried about anything, which is great for me after Tom, which is, I guess it's a testament to this book. So 2 out of 3 are baking. I loved the baking section and the cookies and it felt very American and I love that stuff. So first of all, I made the clover leaf rolls.
Oh, no way.
Which the thing I'm fascinated by in American cuisine is like dinner rolls.
Yes.
Like it's not something we have here. And they all just look so lovely.
So fluffy.
Yeah, so fluffy. So I think the original, the dinner rolls that you see are the Parker House rolls, which I see quite a lot of people talking about making these Parker House rolls, which are in this book. So the dough I used for these clover leaf rolls is Parker House rolls dough. But these just seemed a bit more fun. So I did them like this. So it's like an enriched dough.
Right.
But not like, it's not like a milk bread. It hasn't got cream or anything in it. So it's a cup of milk, which you, what did she say? Like scald. When she talks about heating up milk, she says scald a cup of milk.
Wow.
You add to the milk, 2 tablespoons of butter, some sugar, and some salt. You add that to some yeast and an egg. If you want to, you don't have to add an egg. I added an egg. I remembered it this time. and then it's 2.5 cups of flour. So it's not like the ratios aren't, like I said, they're not super milky or buttery.
Yeah.
So, but when you leave it to rise, you brush the top with melted butter.
Nice.
So for these ones, after it's risen once, you knock it back and then you get a muffin tin.
Right.
And you pull little balls off the dough and roll them up and you put 3 little balls into each muffin tin and then you let it rise again. So they look like little clover leaves, I guess, and they come up like little muffins and then you bake them.
Yeah.
You know, you brush them with melted butter, of course, again. What I will say about this book, and maybe you found the same thing, is that because it's quite old, you have to keep an eye on stuff in the oven because I think the temperature and the timings are made for ovens in 1975 or even the 1930s. So I think I maybe cooked them a little bit too long because I was going by her instructions. And I think also I definitely made them bigger because these recipes, particularly in the baking section, they're massive. This is meant to make 24 2-inch rolls.
Yes.
And I don't need 24 fucking dinner rolls. But anyway, I made 12. So yeah, they come up. They look like little muffins when they come out.
Cute.
They were great. Aww. Like hot out of the oven. You could just eat about 4 of them.
Just alone?
Yeah. We didn't add anything to them.
Wow.
Because they're buttery anyway.
Yeah.
And kind of like they've got that.
A little bit sweet.
Exactly. Just, yeah, perfect probably to have on your table for dinner. Definitely better warm. Not as good cold. Yes. I warmed a couple up the next morning for breakfast and put some peanut butter on. They'd be great. They'd also be great with like jam.
Yeah.
They're a hit. Yeah. I definitely would make them again. They'd be a fun like thing to serve to people. Because like I say, we don't have them. Like, I don't know. I mean, obviously you make a lot of bread. So maybe like if you had a dinner party or whatever, you would serve a loaf of bread. Yeah. But maybe that's just not as done here. But I'm starting it. You come to mine for a dinner party, there's going to be dinner rolls.
I love it.
So that's my first one. My second baking thing was the quick oatmeal cookies.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah. So I've been wanting to make some oatmeal cookies, some oaty cookies for a while, since basically I got that massive order of my beans and oats from Hodmadods. And I just got all of these bags of oats in my cupboard and I just can't get on board with porridge. So I can't do it. It doesn't have the textural joy for me. Sorry to everyone that loves it, but I just can't. I can't.
A lot of people overcook porridge, I think.
And it's just
to the point where it's just, yeah, I don't think it needs to be cooked that long. And you also need a pinch of salt.
Yeah. I think I love like a crunchy texture in anything. Like, so I just think I can't eat a whole bowl of the same kind of sloppy. No, it's not for me. And I'm just not a big fan of milk. So I think that doesn't help. Anyway, so out of these oats.
Right.
An oat cookie is just great, especially because it's a great sweet treat to have in the house. It feels kind of healthy. You can eat it for breakfast. And literally the day my book arrived, right, I texted you and I was like, do you have a good oat cookie recipe? Because I want to make some.
And I never texted you back.
Classic. Bye.
I didn't have one anyway.
Yeah, so the cookie section, like I said, and the breads and everything and the cakes and this. So once I saw that, I was like, I know that she's going to have one. And she does. The quick oatmeal or wheat flake cookies is the whole recipe title. So I was like, boom, oat cookies ahoy. I won't really go into it, but it's a very standard recipe for cookies. Yeah. It's meant to make 3 dozen again.
Wow.
I know. Opposite this one, there's a recipe for Pfeffernuss, which I don't know what they are, but I guess it's a German cookie.
What a fun word.
Yeah.
Pfeffernuss.
And that recipe makes 180 1-inch balls.
If you're like cooking for the troops, maybe. Yeah.
Jeez, I thought this was helping, you know, on every budget. Like, who needs 180 cookies in their house? So yeah, it's butter, sugar, eggs, milk. And then equal parts oats and flour, which we'll come back to.
Okay.
And then there's a suggestion at the bottom to add anything of the following. So chocolate chips, raisins or flaked coconut. So I added both chocolate chips and raisins because I am hardcore. They were great. They were really good. Yeah. So I think the first batch, I made the balls too big. Classic. That's a lot of balls going on in my recipes today.
Who did we curse about the balls? David Thompson, right? How many balls?
How many balls, David? Well, she's very clear about how many balls. But that is my issue with this recipe in particular. She doesn't say how big your ball should be. Pick your cookie
I'm
scoop.
So sorry.
Should be. And obviously they spread. So she says it makes 3 dozen 2-inch cookies, but like, how big does your ball have to be to make a 2-inch cookie? So my first go, they were too big. So I made them smaller. They were great. Again, I sit on the soft side of cookies when you home bake them rather than the crunchy side. So I had to watch them so they didn't catch and go too far. But they were great. They really were. Like I said, would prefer more oats. Next time, I want an oaty cookie. You couldn't really tell that there was oats in them, which is a shame because, it was equal parts. And also there was chocolate chips and raisins and there's a lot going on. So I'd add more oat, or if anyone's got a great oaty cookie, then please let me know. But have I stopped eating them? No. Did I have 2 for breakfast this morning? Yes. A great cookie. I'm glad I did them. It's an easy way to use up your oats. Felt like the pioneer woman. Loved it.
Great. That's so good.
Yeah. And look at me all in the The baking section. So then I was stressed out and I was like, oh, I've got to get like a savory, you know, like a real meal dish here.
Why do we stress ourselves out about this stuff?
I don't know. Like, does anyone care? Tell us, please.
Yeah, let us know if you care because we care too much.
So I got my veg box. Like you said about the vegetables, like they're not super interesting ways of cooking vegetables. It's just like how to prep that vegetable, which is great and fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But it felt like it was a bit of a cop out to do. I mean, I say this and then you'll hear what I've actually cooked. But so in the end, what I cooked was the rice baked in chicken stock.
Oh.
So very simple.
Yeah.
And the reason I did this was, firstly, I wasn't feeling very well yesterday. And that's when I cooked it. And there's a story. Here's a story incoming.
Here we go.
When I was at university, my friend Liv, my very good friend Liv, who was maid of honor at my wedding, and I love her dearly. When you were feeling a bit shit, maybe hungover, or maybe just sick, fresh as flu or whatnot, she would make this amazing, like she called it sticky rice.
Okay.
And we were at uni, we were poor. It was magic. It was like rice cooked down with a stock cube until it went like sticky, basically. Wow. And I just loved it. And I think about it all the time, particularly when I'm not feeling very well.
Right.
And it's one of those like food memories that like, I wish I'd ask her to cook it for me again or like.
This is your chance. Liv, get on it. Gee.
Yeah. She's a midwife now. So she's not busy at all. She hasn't had a busy year at all, like working in the NHS. So she's come around and cooked for me. But I saw this and I was like, I wonder if this tastes like Liv's sticky rice.
Right.
Let me give it a go.
Yeah.
And also it just sounds like a nice way to eat rice.
Yeah, comforting.
So there's this recipe from the Quick Roasting Tin book that I have that we make that is a similar thing. And it's like, it's rice and then like chicken stock. And it's got like, you put chicken and tomatoes and peanut butter and it's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah, it sounds like a bit weird, but it's great. And I just love that taste of rice and chicken stock. Anyway, this is boring. So I made it. So here's how you make it. Very easy. So you use like a oven-proof dish, a fireproof cashew dish, which I used. Fry an onion in some butter.
Yeah.
Add the rice. Coat that up. Add your chicken stock. So it's 1 cup of rice and 2 cups of chicken stock. And then put that in the oven for about 25 minutes. And then when it comes out, you then have to stir 2 tablespoons of butter through it.
Loving all this butter, actually.
Yeah, I know. So there is a lot of butter in this.
Great.
And it was lovely. It was too buttery for me. I shouldn't have added so much butter, but, you know, I was living by the recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a kind of a cop-out dish, but it tasted lovely. It wasn't quite like Liv's sticky. It wasn't chickeny enough, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
But it was really nice. Like, again, quite plain. And so if you don't love plain rice, which I do, and I could eat it in its droves, but like, it's a nice way to like spice up your rice if that's what you're into and serve it on the side with something. So it sounds pretty boring, but, you know, I really enjoyed it. And it did settle me a little bit in my not feeling very well.
If you ever write a cookbook, please, can you call it Spice Up Your Rice?
Yes.
I think that there's something in that.
I don't have that many recipes because I just really like plain rice. Just hook it up to my veins. Don't spice up your rice. That's my cookbook.
It's a very small book.
It's 5 pages long. It's just with different rice and how you cook them to be perfect to eat on their own. Yeah,
great.
So that was me. Had a really great time. There was loads of stuff that I could have cooked, but didn't, obviously. Yeah, what did you cook?
I cooked, again, yeah, like you said, so many of them are really simple that I feel like I've done 3 cop-out dishes because everything was like quite easy.
Yeah.
I was enjoying it because, you know, like we said, the last episode wasn't great crack. So,
sorry, Tom.
Sorry. I welcomed the simplicity. So the first thing that I made, you know, I love toast.
Yeah.
Anytime I see a toast recipe, they're usually very complex. I can't resist. So I did the puffed cheese with mushrooms on toast.
Oh, there's a lot of puffed things in there, isn't there?
Love that.
Yeah.
Just love the word puffed. It's a great word.
Yeah. Puffed cheese, puffed to potatoes, puffed sweet potatoes. I saw it all.
Yeah. So last weekend I made sourdough because I'm just that basic.
Basic.
But I made a Marmite cheese one.
Oh, yeah.
It was so good that I was like, ooh, I bet this would be really good. So I used that as the toast for it. But basically you just cook off some mushrooms and onion. And then separately you heat egg yolk and cheese and salt and pepper and a little bit of cayenne. And then you put that into the mushroom and onion mixture. And then separately, you whip up some egg whites till they're stiff but not dry. And then you kind of fold. Don't say it.
That's our band for the week. Our second band for the week. Stiff but not dry.
you fold these egg whites into the mixture. So I guess it like lightens it a little bit. You toast some bread on one side, you put the cheese mixture on the other side, and then you bake the toast. And I think it was meant to puff up a little bit more than it did. I probably didn't whip my egg whites enough, but it was really yummy. It was very delicious. And it was almost like, you know, Welsh rarebit vibes, but with mushrooms. And yeah, I would definitely do it again. I thought it was great. It looked very ugly, so I'm sorry about that in advance.
I was going to say, I can't imagine what it, I can't really imagine it, but I'm excited to see a picture.
Oh, don't be.
Okay. But I can't really imagine it. But if you're saying it's like a Welsh rarebit, but then puffy.
Yeah. And you can see the mushrooms in there. So it just looks like cheesy mushrooms on toast, I guess, with enriched with an egg. But yeah, it was great. I inhaled it. Loved it. And it was really good with the Marmite bread. So
yeah, that sounds, you know, umami as fuck.
The second thing I made was a bit of a hybrid, or I kind of cheated a little bit. I got a butternut squash in my odd box and just looked up her. She's got a whole squash section and she's got lovely illustrations of the different types of squashes. And yeah, she's got some, you know, very simple recipe of how you just cook a squash, basically.
Roast it like a potato. That's what I thought about, because I had a squash as well.
There's a steamed stuffed summer squash. So I did that, but with the butternut squash, which isn't a summer squash. It's a winter squash. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
I didn't steam it because I thought it would be too big to steam. I think the squashes she was talking about were like the little, you know, the little guys.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
What I did was I just baked it whole and then picked up the recipe from there. Yeah. Okay. I didn't really stick to it. But the main part is what you do after
the stuffing.
Yeah. The stuffing. So when the squash is cooked, you slice it in half, you take out the pulp, and then you mix that with like paprika, Worcester sauce, garlic, onion, breadcrumbs, cheese. There's cheese in every recipe that I've done, by the way, just a heads up. And
of course,
curry powder or dry mustard. Cheese and curry and squash, it's a bit weird, but I'm kind of into it. It's like a weird, it's a bit sweet. Yeah. But anyway, basically you mix all that up, you put it back into the butternut squash shell, and then you put that back in the oven. Quite retro. I think like stuffing vegetables and all that is like...
Yeah, so much stuffing in this.
Yeah. Yeah, you literally just bake it for 10 minutes till it's hot and it's kind of cheesy on top. Again, yeah, to your point, I think 10 minutes was probably a bit too long because the oven was quite hot, but it was actually really nice. Like I said, that's a funny kind of combination, but I never thought about cooking a squash that way, and it was something new, and I think I would do it again. I think I would do it again.
Yeah.
It was
nice. Like a little weeknighty.
Yeah. It's how to make like one vegetable into a meal, basically.
And I bet you benefited from roasting it rather than steaming it, because you just don't get the flavor of squash or really any vegetable if you steam it.
Absolutely.
Roasting squash particularly, right, really brings out the good shit.
Yeah, quite a nice like sweetness. Yeah, so that was that. That was fun. And then the last thing that I made was cheese muffins.
Oh, the muffin gang today.
Yeah, cheese, and more cheese. This is very simple, but she has a whole section on muffins. And like you said, before you start the recipe, she's like, please read about muffins.
Okay, mom.
And refers you back to a previous page. So you're like, okay, I'll read about the muffins. But yeah, super simple. I just did it on lunchtime yesterday, but it's like flour, baking powder, sugar, salt, cheese, and then you mix in some egg and milk and butter. She's very emphatic about not over mixing muffins, that like there should still be kind of, you're not going for a really smooth batter, basically. And yeah, she tells you like how far up the tin they should be and everything. So it's quite precise, which is nice. And then, yeah, you just bake them. I think it's about 20 minutes or so. And they were lovely. They were more like almost like, yeah, they were quite bready, I guess. I took a picture of the inside as well. And yeah, more maybe bready than muffiny, I guess. But they're savory, so that figures. I thought that like they would just be a great base for to add some herbs or to add some like chili, or you could really add to that recipe and just use it as a base.
Chili would be so nice.
Yeah, it would be really good. And maybe like, I don't know, if you wanted to put in feta or something like that as well, that could be lovely. They were really good when they were just out of the oven. Obviously like warmy, cheesy, bready.
Yeah.
Heaven. And then I toasted some this morning and put some butter on.
Oh, nice.
And that was really nice. I would say, yeah, like when they were out of the oven, I did spread some butter on as well, because I was just eating them and I was like, this is missing something. And it's always butter.
The answer is always butter.
There you go. So they were great. I would definitely make them again, and I would play around with the recipe a lot and add different things. But yeah, they're a fun little bready thing.
That's good. Look at us baking up a storm.
I know.
Thanks to Irma.
Thanks, Irms. But they were just three very quick, simple things. But that was great because, like you said, it wasn't stressful and I didn't have to go and buy loads of ingredients. I basically had everything. That's one thing.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I will say it's just like most of the ingredients you probably have at home. So it's just really accessible that way.
Yeah, I agree. Is there anything that you didn't cook that you would like to have cooked? The squirrel, obviously.
Squirrel, yeah. Gonna get my boots out. loads of stuff, actually. There's popovers as well. And
yes, I saw those.
Would love to make popovers. A lot of baking stuff. There was these pecan slices. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw them. I was really close to making them, but I'd already done loads of sweet baking this week. But she says in the intro to that recipe that many a copy of Joy has been sold on the strength of this recipe.
Wow.
So I really would love to make that. I love pecans. Favorite of the peanuts.
All the peanuts are the best ones.
There's saltwater taffy in here as well. And I don't really know what that is. So I want to make it. I've just seen it on TV and I like saying saltwater taffy. So.
Yeah. Is it toffee? Is it fudge?
I think it's like a candy kind of thing. Oh, candy. There was corn fritters, which I just love a corn fritter.
Yeah. There's a whole fritter section, right? They all look great.
Cornbread, I would like to try her recipe. Like that American bacon, there's like beignets in there as well.
Yes. I saw the beignets and I was like, yes.
And some of her cocktail recipes and punch. Yeah. They look like they would make for a great night.
She was really good at entertaining.
One has like one bottle of white rum, one bottle of dark rum.
Oh, like, of course.
Easy, you know, just get fucked.
Don't bother with the food afterwards.
Yeah. So yeah, there was so much. And like we've said, it's just so massive. I keep seeing something new every time, similar to Cook's Companion.
Yeah, I've just seen the birthday bread horse. Did you see that?
No, but I wanted.
And there's a little picture.
Oh my God.
It's a horse made of bread.
Is it a thoroughbred?
Hey, oh, wow, let's just leave it there.
Mic drop. I'm so sorry.
Wow, no, don't ever apologize. That was great. I also would like to have tried some of the bit more weird stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to convince my husband to let me cook poached eggs in tomato soup.
How'd that go down? How did that conversation go?
Well, it was in one of the brunch.
Yes, I love the brunch section.
Menu. Yeah. The brunch menu is eggs poached in tomato soup. So you poach them in the soup, just to be clear. You don't poach them separately and then put them in the soup. It's an early shakshuka. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or a cheats shakshuka.
Shakshuka 101.
I just like to understand how, like, do you have to really boil the tomato soup? Like, it's like really bubbling away and you're like, that's literally what you do. Anyway, so I didn't make that because I didn't know how well it would go down. Well, according to my husband's reaction, it wouldn't go down very well. And then in my odd box, I got radishes. So I was like, oh, I wonder if she has any radish recipes. Yeah. She doesn't, but here's what she says about radishes. Transforming red or white radishes into clever garnishes fascinates the young. And the allure endures. If you've read Peeps, you know that he ate buttered radishes at William Penn's. Worth trying too, especially with black ones.
I understood about 10% of
So basically, if you're young, you'd be fascinated by a radish cut into a strange shape.
Has she heard of TikTok?
Yeah, I've got a massive bag of radishes. I need to know what to do with them. And I just, there's only so many you can eat. I might pickle them.
Or go find some young people and just fascinate them with your radish art.
Maybe I'd start a radish TikTok channel. And fascinate them.
Bring their two great loves together.
Are we going to have to do a TikTok recipe minisode? Because I feel like we might have to.
But I'm not on TikTok. You're going to have to dictate that.
I'm, you know, very involved in the TikTok. Hey, kids.
You're our youth correspondent.
Anyway, should we rate this book?
Let's rate this book.
Just a little reminder on how we rate these books. We rate the book out of five different categories. Those categories are usability and accessibility, that's one. Ingredients used, aesthetics? Is it veggie friendly and not so new anymore, but our most recent addition, it is inspirability. Do we want to cook from it? And each episode, we choose a different rating system based on the book and its themes. So for Thomas Keller, we used squeezy bottles because he was obsessed with them. For Nigel Slater, given a throwback, we did farmers markets.
Oh, yeah.
And so for The Joy of Cooking, we are going to rate in cocaines.
Cocaines?
Cocaines. It's spelled, so just to let you guys know, it's spelled C-O-C-K-A-I-G-N-E.
Yeah. I YouTubed it before this and she did say it was like cocaine. People, you know, we're not talking about drugs here, just so people are aware.
No. We're unsure, you know, what it even is. It's like I Googled to like understand like what it means, and it's like a utopia place, right? It's a utopia place.
A term in medieval times that signified a mythical land of peace and plenty.
Oh, well, there we go. We're writing out of mythical lands of peace and plenty, or cocaines.
Oh. I've just read something.
Tell me.
That the authors of this book named their country home cocaine.
Oh.
Yes. And then obviously they named their favourite recipes cocaine because they were cooking them up in the country house.
Oh.
All becomes clear. Probs should have had that at the start of the episode. Sorry, lads. But anyway, now you know.
Now you know. So how many cocaines are you giving The Joy of Cooking? Sorry, Joy of Cooking.
Lose that though.
Sorry.
No, I'm going to give Joy of Cooking 4.5 cocaine. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you why.
Please explain your answer.
So usable and accessible. Very easy. Mm-hmm. There's no snobbery here. The ingredients, like we said, you probably have them. They're cheap or they're easy to find if you don't as well. So 1 point for that. I'm going to give it a point for veggie friendliness because whilst there is a lot of meat and like tongue and fish and shit like that, there are veggie things. And also there's a lot of baking mm-hmm. evident in what we made. So I don't feel like, you know, us veggies are excluded here. Aesthetics, I'm going to give it a point.
Wow.
I really like the little drawings and I just like how retro it looks. And mm-hmm. also it's a kind of nostalgia thing as well because my mom had it on her cookbook shelf. Mm-hmm. I just like seeing it. So it's a point for aesthetics. And then I'm just taking a half point off for inspirability because like we said, some of the shit's weird. but some of it's, you know, like that whole southern baking section, and some of it's weird that you want to cook it. Mm. I think we could have like a really fun like retro
yes.
dinner party and make some of the weird stuff. I think we should do that.
Yeah, let's do that for sure. 4.5.
4.5 cocaines out of 5. Victoria, what are you going to give it?
I am going along a similar line. Okay. I agree. Very usable, accessible. So that gets a point. The ingredients, again, I didn't have to go out of my way to get anything mm-hmm. special. So that gets a yes. Obviously with the caveat that, yeah, there's brains, there's an aspic yeah. section, there's yeah. stuff that, but you're not going to cook that anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
I am going to take 0.5 off for aesthetics. Okay. Because, as we know, I like pictures, but a bit like some of the other giant books we've done, it doesn't lend itself to pictures.
No.
But I like the way that it's laid out, and I like the sections, and I love that menu section at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, some of the little drawings, they're useful at times, a bit like Julia. When you need it, it's there.
Yeah.
A yes for veggie friendly, because there is, like you said, there's a lot in there, mm-hmm. and the sweet section is so huge. And then, yeah, I'm taking 0.5 off for inspirability.
Okay.
Because a bit like when we talked about The Cook's Companion, it doesn't feel yes. like something I'll be leafing through to be inspired by, but I'm not going to give it away because
yeah,
we keep talking about the baking section, but like when you're like going out to meet people and you want to take something sweet or mm-hmm. you know, people are coming over and you want to have something in the house, like this is the perfect book to think, oh, what cookies can I make with stuff I've got in? Or
yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I take 0.5. So it gets 4 cocaines from me.
Ooh.
So it's high.
I do think everyone who enjoys cooking or is interested in food should have a copy of this because it's almost a moment in time that's captured with all the retro shit and everything. And even though you never cook it, it's just a fun book to have on your shelf.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely try and get yourself a secondhand one because I feel like based on what you said about the more recent ones, yeah. I think these are probably a bit more of a joy. Yeah. to cook from and to read. And whilst having ramen and stuff is nice, then what about aspic, you know? So we loved it.
We loved it.
Do you want to tell us about next episode's book?
Yes.
Where in the world are we going?
We're back in the UK for this one. I feel like when people ask me what books we're going to do next, this chef comes up quite a lot.
Yeah.
A little bit vintage as well. It's Delia Smith.
Yay!
How to cook, not how to eat.
That's Nigella.
Another babe. Yeah, so maybe by the end of this season have done like each country's most loved book. Cook's Companion for Australia, Joy of Cooking for the US. And I think How to Cook is likely to be that for a lot of people in the UK as
Yeah,
well.
Me too.
Another big boy.
Mine's arrived. It's heavy. Because this was originally like three books, right? It's three different books. And now you can buy them all in one. We had this one at home when I was a kid. So what's exciting about this one, I think it came out in my lifetime.
Yes.
Like I remember the hype about it.
Do you?
Yeah. And I remember my mom getting it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'll get to think about my favorite Delia Smith moment when she's shouting at the football, let's be having you.
Big football fan, our deals. Not enough babies called Delia these days.
No.
That's all. Well, on that note, this was great. We love you, Irma. We probably love you, Delia. TBC on your recipes, but you'll find out next time.
And if we can find the recipes that we've cooked from Joy of Cooking, we'll pop them onto the website, thecookbookcircle.com.
We've got the.
We've got the there. We're not dropping that. That's it. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Cookbook Circle. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you've enjoyed it, please leave us a review as it helps others to find us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram, @cookbookcircle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, please don't forget to tag us. See you next time. Bye. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.